Moncrief with Gas Networks Ireland. Aren't you tired of that ugly fuel storage tank, having to order and write that big check for the delivery guy? gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.
At one time, Eddie Maher was the most wanted man in Britain. He carried out a daring robbery and made off with £1.2 million. And once he got his cut, he and his family had to spend the next 20 years pretending to be other people. His book is called Fast Eddie, My 20 Years on the Run as Britain's Most Wanted Man. Eddie, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Could you tell us the circumstances in which you first contemplated carrying out this robbery?
Well, initially, I worked for Securicore, as you know. And basically, cut the long story short, I was approached by a couple of nondescript people and made threats against my family and, told me what I was basically going to be doing for them.
And what did they say they'd do to your family if you didn't carry out what they wanted?
It would have been, general terms causing my family harm. I had a young son of, 3 years old at the time and my wife. So, no particular actions, but actions that wouldn't be a good result, basically.
Mm. And so the robbery itself, how did that take place?
I was the driver of the Securicore van, and on the morning in question, myself and another guy were delivering the money to banks, and we pulled up outside the first bank, and he went in and took a bag of money in. And when he came out, I'd driven off with the van. It was just gone,
All right. Very straightforward then, really.
Yeah. Well, in the book itself, you'll see there's a lot of cartoons and stuff that they made up at the time. It was quite funny,
Yes.
I know it's not a funny subject, but
it probably wasn't funny then, actually. Had you made plans then as to how to get out of the country?
No. I knew I was getting out of the country. I mean, after a while, being under duress, basically, I sort of went along with it. It was a touch of, I went along with it. I might as well make the best of a bad job. The idea was I was going to go to America. I was always going to be the fool guy, and that took the heat off of anybody else, It was always going to be me, and the police were only ever going to believe that anyway. So, I was no initial plans, but the plan, was a loose plan that I was be going to over to America eventually.
Had you already sent your partner, Debbie, over to the States?
Oh, yeah, I got her out of the country, before all this happened. She never had any idea about what was going on, and she thought she was going over for a holiday, and it ended up a 20-year holiday.
So what was the gap, the time lag, between carrying out the robbery and then you getting on a plane and flying to the States?
It was, I can't remember the exact timing, but it was a couple of weeks.
Mm. Given that there was a massive manhunt on for you at that stage of the game,
mm-hmm.
How sure were you that you'd managed to get on a plane and get out?
I wasn't sure at all. I mean, I was obviously, under the threat of arrest all the time. It was, pretty nerve-wracking, to say the least.
Yeah, so you'd managed to get on the plane and you had your cut from the robbery, which was about, 120 grand, something like that.
Yeah, something like
in
that.
In a bag with you. So when you arrive, I shouldn't be laughing. See, you arrive in the States, you meet Debbie, and then it's, I've something to tell you.
Sort of, yeah. The explanation went on for a little bit longer than just one explanation.
But,
it was slightly strifeful for a couple of weeks.
At the same time, though, what's amazing, and I suppose this is because it was pre-9/11, how relatively easy it was for the two of you to move to a town, to get various forms of identification, and then to get on with your lives.
Yeah, exactly. It was, as you say, because it was pre-9/11, a lot of things were different. I mean, I became a pretty good forger. I obviously had to supplement my income, though I didn't have enough, money there to live extravagantly, although, I did buy myself an aeroplane and learn how to fly it, and I bought myself a boat, and, I used to fly over to Vegas, because we lived in Colorado initially, and I flew over to Vegas for about $25 a flight and ended up getting comped over there and became, supplemented my income from Vegas. So, But, yeah, you know, I became pretty good as a forger for making stuff up so that I could get some ID to work and live with.
And the names you gave yourselves, Stephen King and Sarah King, was that deliberate? And did you get, are you that Stephen King?
No, the guys that arranged for my transfer over there, they supplied me with the ID for Stephen King, which was, you know, everybody thought was really funny at the time, but... he was one of my favourite authors, but, you know, it wasn't deliberate.
Now, though, at the same time, when you say you did manage to make something of an income from going to Vegas, was it difficult to get jobs, to get a green card?
Yeah, I didn't get a green card initially. I mean, I obviously lived on what I was doing and, you know, the money that I had. Eventually, obviously, it ran out. But what had happened is previously, or, you know, a long time before that, my elder brother, one of my brothers, had actually married an American and he had a green card. So I just assumed his name and identity, you know, so that in the end I became, you know, my brother.
And again, they didn't seem to check it too rigorously to make sure you were who you said you were.
No. Again, it was pre-9/11. I you know, in the... I did a few different jobs. I drove a magazine wagon, you know, like with explosives for a company one time. And, you know, I had my own truck, so I drove over the road and, I did lots of different things. And then I eventually got a job for, Nielsen TV ratings. Mm. And because, you know, I only had to supply the details of everything first. One time I stayed with that company for, you know, 11 years and got promoted through that company. So I never had to really re-show anything, you know. So it was, if you stick with one job, you don't really need to keep giving him new ID each time.
And you did live in various places. And when people would ask you about yourselves, that you were Stephen and Sarah King, did you have to have a very elaborate backstory of how you ended up living in the States and about your family and things like that?
Yeah. I mean, by then I was like Michael Marr, so, you know, I was... the Stephen King thing I got rid of as soon as humanly possible because it's a bit embarrassing when people start questioning you, you know, thinking you're a famous writer. But, I mean, we would make friends, you know. My son, I had another son born over there, and, like, obviously, you know, my two children went to school, so we would make friends the same as anybody else, like, you know, with other kids' families. And... after a while, you know, people would notice that you never went back over to England to visit and nobody came over to visit you there. So, you know, eventually they would start asking, you know, what's the question? I mean, it became a joke between us that, you know, not so much a joke, but when people started asking us, are we in the witness protection program, that they you know, they were asking too many questions, you know, they're looking too deeply, and it was probably time to move on.
And during that long period, how much contact did you have with your family back home?
None at all. I mean, the only time I had any contact at all, I contacted my mother once before she died. That was it.
And were you aware of the amount of coverage that the robbery had got?
Yes and no. I knew, you know, in the time I was waiting, you know, to go over to America, that, you know, that's when they gave me the Fast Eddie nickname and that sort of thing. So I knew it was becoming, you know, quite extensive. But then we sort of avoided contact with anything to do with England, you know, for the whole time we were over there. If we heard an English accent, we would walk the other way, and that, you know, I still do that now, to be perfectly honest with you.
As you say, you did have another son when you were there. Lee, or your older son, grew up and, as kids often do, became a bit troublesome. And I suppose that was the roots of how you ended up getting caught.
Yeah, I mean, long story short, I say it's more described in more depth in the book, obviously. But, I mean, it's basically his ex-wife read about me on the internet. She looked up on the internet, you know, which wasn't very extensive, you know, when I first went over there. And, you know, if you put in my name on the internet nowadays, you get 75,000 hits, I believe it is. And, you know, she found out who I was through that and decided to turn me in for the reward money. So
lovely.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, She didn't get it, but she got a little bit of it in you, and I think I gave her like 10,000 token or something or other.
And once she turned you in, what happened? Did the FBI come screaming to your front door?
Well, it was funny because 2 days before that, I actually went to the police station to pay up a traffic fine for Lee, actually. And we were talking to the police outside, and, you know, we were a bit concerned about her, his ex-wife, you know, because she'd moved off. And another cop came over to me and pulled me to the side and said, well, you know, you're concerned about her, but what would you say if I told you that she'd come into the police station and told us that you weren't Michael Marr, but you were Edward Marr, and that you were wanted in England, and the only reason I'm not arresting you now is because the FBI want to arrest you. So... So I said, well, you know, I don't know what you're talking about, and then left. And if that was, you know, I got 2 days' notification that I was going to be arrested.
And was it only at that stage then that you said to your kids, this is who we really are?
Yeah.
How did they react to that?
Shocked, obviously. You know, just really difficult, you know.
Yeah, and then you were extradited, and was it how many years in prison did you do?
The maximum sentence was 6 years, and they gave me 5 because I pleaded guilty in the end, and so they dropped the 1 year off, so I got a 5-year prison sentence.
Mm. And now you're obviously back in the UK, and is it the situation that you're not allowed to leave the UK?
Not for another month. The sentence, I'm under licence now for another, for another month, and then after that I can leave the UK.
Okay, all right. And is it possible for you to go back to the States again?
Much as I'd love to, I don't think they'll allow me. I don't know. I think I'm a shady character for some reason.
But, yes. And your wife and your two sons, where are they living now?
They're here as well.
Yeah. Is that okay? Because especially for your sons, it must be weird because one was born in the States, they both grew up in the States, and I assume they kind of had come to regard that as home.
Yeah. Well, we all do. You know, I regard it as home myself. You know, we lived there 20 years and made a life there. It's hard. It's not easy to be here. It is what it is. I mean, they have an option, you know, fortunately. But, you know, my options are a little bit more limited.
Yeah. What are you going to do now, Eddie? Or do you know?
We don't plan on staying in England. We plan on, you know, moving on somewhere, hopefully. We would love to go back to America, as I said, you know, because it's our life. I mean, technically, I was charged in America and I volunteered to come back. They never extradited me, by the way. I actually came back of my own volition. But there are no charges outstanding for me in America, and I never actually broke the law over there. Over there, they found it hard to understand why I was being arrested because they have the statute of limitations, and I was charged with theft, not robbery. So the statute of limitations over there is like 5 years. So after 19 years, you know, there was a bit, you know, they found it a bit strange.
Yeah.
But the only thing that I'd, you know, the only offence I made over there was I outstayed my visa, technically. So I was banned when they brought me onto the plane. The marshals took me on the plane and gave me a little bit of paper and said that I couldn't return to the US for 5 years. So technically, after 5 years, I can go back to America, but they also have other laws of when you've got previous convictions and when you've been in the prison that they don't allow you in. But, you know, I could... It swings and roundabouts. I'm not sure whether I could go back there. I'd love to, but, you know, we'll have to wait and see for that one.
The book is called Fast Eddie, My 20 Years on the Run as Britain's Most Wanted Man. Eddie Maher, thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me, Sean.
Moncrief with Gas Networks Ireland. Aren't you tired of that ugly fuel storage tank, having to order and write that big check for the delivery guy? gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.